I'm Allison Cummings, and I'm here with Chris Garrett, online business and blogging coach and self-described all-around geek. Chris shares his advice and experiences with small businesses, including consultants, freelancers, authors, coaches, and speakers. He's also a writer. He's contributed to 5 books, including the Pro Blogger book with Darren Rouse. He's also a speaker at major conferences and events like Blog World, South by Southwest, basically you name it. And if that weren't enough, he lives in the fifth most livable city in the world, Calgary. So first of all, thank you, Chris, for taking the time out of your busy schedule, and welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
A lot of people, I think, idealize what you, Chris Brogan and Darren Rouse, what you do. I mean, all the pro bloggers. Now, I kind of had a question, you know, being a pro blogger, heaven or hell?
I really enjoy it. But the thing is, I'm not a typical pro blogger in the Darren Rouse sort of, even though I co-authored the book with him. One of the reasons why I think he wanted me to write that book with him is because I have a different perspective on it. Because blogging for me has always been a way to get an engaged audience of people who might want to buy from me services and products. So I never went full into the advertising thing. AdSense never really worked for me. I didn't really like it. So I've never been the typical pro blogger in that regard. I actually was the CEO of an advertising network for a couple of times, the same one. And even so, I've always leant towards selling products and services and the blog being a way to gather an audience. So I've never done the massive traffic thing and getting AdSense clicks, which is much more of a, there's a lot more freedom to that, but it's much more of a kind of passive income. So that, I think, is a lot of people's dreams when they think about pro blogging, whereas I've always liked to work with clients. So, you know, that does involve time on the telephone, scheduling a diary and all the rest of it. But I love it. The day I stopped working for somebody else, it allowed me to go to all of my daughter's school things, you know, sports days and parent meetings, and anytime she's been sick, you know, being able to take her to the doctors and take her to the hospital when it's needed. I've never had to ask permission for vacations, you know, so on that side of things, it's always been exactly what I wanted. And there's been ups and downs with it, obviously, but I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't go back to working for somebody else. Been tempted a couple of times when, like, negotiating with mortgage lenders, that they'd rather see a contract than a limited company accounts. But, you know, other than that.
I read a little bit about your background, and it was interesting to read, because you're actually grew up, you're really shy. So this is a kind of a surprising career choice, because you do a lot of public speaking. You're a teacher as well.
Yeah, I am shy and I'm introverted, and a lot of people combine the two, but I think having both is, it can hold you back. But the thing is, I always tell my clients, you don't have to be confident in yourself, be confident in your content and your service. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as you can speak to people about something that you know works for them, then you can get over a lot of anything that might hold you back from being shy or introverted. And introversion doesn't mean that you don't like dealing with people. It just means that I call it my social battery. Your battery runs down and you have to recharge it by going into your cave for a while. You know, I do like people and I like being around them. It's just I find that drains my energy the more I do. Whereas an extrovert, my brother is an extrovert. He's in 3 rock bands. he's energized by other people. So he finds it difficult to be on his own without anybody praising him and you know, getting any adulation. So, you know, it's a difference of style, but when I'm up on stage, I panic for the first 5 minutes and then I lose myself in the content and then I'm fine.
I actually identify with that completely. I have to make it about not myself, but whatever the, you know, like you said, whatever the product is, whatever you're discussing. And if I remove myself from the equation, I'm fine.
Yeah, and the thing is, you actually deliver a better product or speech when you do that, because it's about them, not about you. So it's actually a good thing. But, you know, I'm not alone in being an introvert. If you look into a lot of the bloggers, especially the ones that came from a writing background, you'll find there's a lot of introversion there. It's actually really interesting that a lot of us hide behind our written word.
What do you do, just to, you know, to share a tip or trick, what do you do right before you have to go on stage or something to kind of, you know, prepare yourself?
My usual routine is I go to the washroom about 20 times, and I try to remember who I'm doing it for, and, you know, that thing of it being about them, not about me. I try to remember who in the audience I'm speaking to and what their challenges are, and I try to make it about giving at least one light bulb moment that they can take away and implement, and that helps me. And I try to remember that I've survived in the past. And the thing is, we all, especially you know, parents or people with family, there will be tougher things to do than speak. You know, there'll be things that you have to go through, and so, you know, it's actually a privilege rather than torture to survive, really.
You mentioned on your blog, a recent post, that you had a real near-death experience that you were going to be writing about.
Yeah.
Do you want to share that?
Yeah, I've got an awesome new phobia that I didn't have before. As a birthday treat, we decided I was going to go whitewater kayaking. And part of the routine of learning about kayaking is to be able to tip it over and get out and not drown. That didn't work so well for me, because the idea is you pull a cord and you pop out of your kayak and everything's fine. I was pulling and pulling on this cord upside down underwater with not very much air left in my lungs, and it just wasn't popping me out. The rubber thing that surrounds you and attaches you to the kayak wouldn't come off. And so I'm underwater. So the strange thing, as I'm realizing that I really need to get out of the water very, very quickly, because otherwise I'm going to black out or drown, I was thinking, why isn't my life flashing before my eyes? Why does everybody else have this experience that, you know, they got? All I kept on thinking was, I felt angry that the thing that wasn't working, that I was pulling on this cord and nothing was happening. I was afraid and I was disappointed that, you know, but also I was thinking about my wife and daughter, that I was leaving them behind, or potentially. And the thing is, in that moment of panic, clearly I wasn't thinking clearly. You know, I wasn't, from the sidelines or replaying it back, there's all kinds of things that I should have done or things I could have been doing. And I probably shouldn't have been panicking quite as much, because I had paid an instructor for, you know, the whole group of us had an instructor there. So was I in actual danger? Probably not, rationally looking at it. But at the time, I thought I was going to die, because I was trapped underwater. My air was basically run out, and I couldn't even see properly, which was something that was quite surprising. You know, a lot of people say in experiences where they have this really intense fight or flight that everything becomes crystal clear and they have this clarity. I didn't. I had like tunnel vision. So I couldn't even see if there was anybody around me. So I was underneath the water, felt like a long time, but probably wasn't. And just as I felt like, okay, this is it, I can't stay underwater for any longer, the instructor managed to lift me and the kayak right way up. He spun me around, and I took a gasp of air, and I was like so grateful to him. But the thing is, I had to get straight back in.
Oh gosh.
Because otherwise, what I was jokingly referring to as my awesome new phobia would have been a real phobia.
Oh yeah.
And then I had to go the next day to the actual river. And I mean, that's the two lessons learned from, well, three lessons if you include not having the life flash before my eyes. The second lesson was, you can actually hold your breath for a lot longer than you think. And the third lesson is you absolutely have to get back on the horse. You know, the old phrase of, you know, if you do something that scares you, you've got to do it again, because otherwise it could be seriously impact, you know, the rest of your life. Because that night I didn't sleep a wink, because I had the next morning, I had to get up early again for the next part of the class. And I had all these crazy thoughts of, you know, what if I drown? You know, what if I don't come back? It's this stupid birthday gift to myself. You know, I could leave my daughter without a dad. All these crazy thoughts were going through my head. But between my wife and I, we decided I was going. And I'm glad I did, because I managed to get in the water. I managed to learn how to not tip over, which, you know, I could have done with learning as the first thing. And when it came to actually going into the rapids, I said, no, that's it. I'm at my limit. But I'd done a bit more so that I didn't let it hold me back. And I think there's a big lesson in that. You have to push through things that scare you, even if they scare you, like terrify you. I think you sort of grow from it and learn from it, and it's not the failure, it's what you do to get yourself back up. I think that really makes a big difference to people. It's not falling over, it's getting back
Wow, I challenge almost anyone to find a better example of that.
up. Yeah, the thing is, it was all voluntary, so that's the crazy part. You know, beforehand, I didn't have a fear of water, I didn't have a fear of drowning. Boats were fine, I used to enjoy them. I thought it was going to be awesome, and instead, it
Gosh.
just, you know, scared me half to death.
Well, now you have another thing for like to share with it with people, right?
Yeah, it's embarrassing as well, though, but I will share it on my blog, because, you know, it was one of a number of things that actually, there's been some life challenges over the summer. And it happened at the same time as a group of my really close friends were being attacked online because of something. There was something going on with a couple of people, and it's spread out to the whole group. So the whole group's been attacked because of something that a couple of people were accused of. And it was funny how the lesson came at that time, because I was able to say, look, don't be driven by fear. Don't let fear cloud your judgment. And the fear of these people that are doing the attacking is huge. But actually, you know, if you focus on the good stuff, the people you're helping, the people who are getting benefit from what you do, you can't let the people who are attacking control you. Can't let them dictate what you do, because there's a lot of people were ready to give up over the summer because of these attacks. And it's sad, because the people doing the attacking, that's what they want. You know, it's like when people say terrorists hate us for our freedom. Well, if you take our freedom away, they've won. And it's the same thing. So it was funny how it happened in amongst all of this. And so I had a kind of perspective on the whole fear thing that I didn't have before. And it is clearly, it's about fear tactics. It's about trying to control people with fear. And we can't allow fear to be our guidance. You know, you have to think about, going back to the start of the conversation, who are you serving? Who's your audience? Who are you going to help? And try to downplay the nasty stuff.
Just to go into your experience as an entrepreneur, you started out. I think your first blog post was in the late 1990s.
Yeah, well, it depends on your definition, actually, because I started online with the bulletin boards with the old squeaky modems back in the late 1980s, and my first website was 1994, and a couple of years later, like 1996, I had a science fiction website where I used to write about science fiction and fantasy TV films and books, because I was involved in a lot of online communities. And it was, I'd say it was a blog, because it was reverse chronological, so the newest stuff was at the top, and people could comment through my guest book. So maybe my first blog was 1996, But my first online diary slash journal slash, something that everybody would recognize as a blog was 1998. So, yeah, I've been geeking out about this stuff for quite a long time.
Well, exactly. And I looked you up on, well, it's now the archive.org,
Yeah,
but the
the
Wayback
Wayback
Machine.
Machine.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. And I'm going to mention something about that in a second. But the reason why I wanted to talk to you about, to continue on fear and not letting fear stop you. There was a blog post in 2010 that you wrote after 5 years of striking out on your own, and it did have the same theme. You're really, saying, I encourage people, don't let fear stop you, grab opportunities that come up on a positive side of that as well, not letting fear stop you. And I know a lot of business, small businesses, entrepreneurs like myself, it really is hard to not kind of let those inner voices stop you and not to grab what you could that's right in front of you.
Yeah, and it's not just the inner voices. I think sometimes we forget that who you surround yourself with can be nurturing and supporting and a positive influence, or it could be a negative influence that holds you back. And we all have a mixture of those. We'll have people who are supporting us, encouraging us, motivating us, and holding us accountable. And then you'll have people that say, why are you doing that? Why are you rocking the boat? Why are you throwing away the good stuff you already have? Why are you taking the risks? Some people might think you've got ideas above your station, that you're, the tall poppy syndrome. I don't know if you're familiar with the crab bucket story, but apparently if you put crabs in a bucket and one tries to climb out, all the others will drag them back. And sometimes your community or your network around you can be like that. Instead of pushing you out and pushing you further forward, they'll pull you back. And so the inner voices, if you can get a handle on those, that's really important. But also part of that is surrounding yourself with people who are going to support you, encourage you. I'm not saying disconnect from family and friends who aren't supporting you, because very often they're doing that out of love. They don't want you to see you get hurt. But if you can draw positive and encouraging people to you, people that'll tell you the hard truth as well, then that's the best thing for an entrepreneur, because it won't be an easy ride. It won't always be smooth. And as I said before, it's not about not making mistakes. It's not about bad things not happening. It's about what happens afterwards. Do you get back up? Do you keep plowing on? And especially for anybody that's self-employed, the income isn't always level. So you've got the confidence and inner game concerns, but also you can have financial concerns. You are taking a risk. So you've got to have, as well as the right mindset, the right environment. And I think that includes getting a group of people around you to say, am I doing the right thing? Can you hold me accountable? Can you make sure that I stick to what I said I was going to do?
Who have been some of those people for you?
Any number. I mean, my wife is probably the person that I've relied on most, because she's been on the whole journey with me. She actually, we met when I was earning £30 a week. she's seen me on the absolute entire journey. Also, there's people you would know, people like Darren Rouse and Brian Clark. When the startup I was involved with folded back in 2007, I think early 2007, they were the people who helped me get back on my feet. Aaron Wall, Darren Rouse, Brian Clark. They gave me my first links for my redeveloped website, and and they've always been people that I've looked to for advice and help, and to partner with as well. So there's, everybody from people you know and people to people you wouldn't recognize. Sean D'Souza from New Zealand, he's been awesome as well. I got to meet him a couple of years ago. I'd love to go back and see him again.
So anything with these people that you're working on right now?
That I can talk about? Probably not.
You might want to talk a little bit about Authority Blogger. I did a really quick summary when we started out, but maybe you want to go into a little bit more kind of what you're doing right now.
Well, Authority Blogger is my flagship course, and it's about building that audience of people who know, like, trust you, want to buy from you. And I love it, not just because it pays the bills, but also because the people that join and the people I talk to in that have been absolutely wonderful. I love the people that join that and go through it, and I like seeing the results that they get. And Authority Blogger is one of those things that I did have a fear about launching. We were talking about fear earlier. I procrastinated for a good 8 or 9 months, and it was a couple of people basically gave me a boot up the behind, Liz Strauss and Darren and a couple of other people that just said, you're crazy, you know this stuff works, people will get a lot of value out of giving it in this format, what's holding you back? And I had this perfectionism and analysis paralysis that I wanted to make it this huge, huge thing. And I did finally launch it, but then I realized that I had to change it based on the reality of all the people that were going through it. So I might as well have had it started way earlier and not being so perfectionist, because I had to work on it anyway. But that was back in 2007. I gave my coaching clients the material and worked through it with them and got their feedback. And then I released it as a limited beta to a group, and then opened it up for real. But I'm so glad I got over that analysis paralysis, because it has been really good, and it's sold out every time I've offered it since 2007. So it's really that my main thing that I do. That and the coaching has been the one constant. Everything else has changed over the years, but that's been the main constant. So it's, I think got nearly 200 people going through the 2011 version, and there'll be a 2012. And everybody gets lifetime access, so I can say that. I'm not putting anybody off joining it, because everybody that joins gets all the new stuff every time it comes out.
Yeah, it seems it's very popular. You have a waiting list too, don't you?
Yeah, there's always been a waiting list of some variety. Mm-hmm. The reason why there's a waiting list now is because a lot of people, when they join, they don't just want the material. They want to get coaching calls with me. I usually give one or two coaching calls, depending on what the demand's going to be like. But I have to close it, because obviously I have to do those calls. The more people that take them up, the more time I have to dedicate. And, I'm going to be moving house twice, going to Australia, going to LA, going to the UK coming up. I had to make sure that I had enough time before all that stuff happened. So I have to, it's something that it will be going on sale 24/7 soon, but without the coaching calls, without the private calls. And that means I won't have to keep opening it and closing it. But it's really that the thing that's always limited how many people I could take on at once is I want to give one-on-one attention. And obviously there's only so much of me to go around.
From having participated in Authority Rules and their tribe, et cetera, I know that you're very careful about your approach is not emphasizing profits. It's providing your audience, your students, you could say, more value and building trust and loyalty.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of ways of approaching business. You could have, you could be a 5-star Michelin chef and have a small number of people who you charge a lot to, but they're super delighted. At the other end of the scale is the McDonald's or the hot dog stand. At the very bottom is the hot dog stand, where you have to have thousands of customers paying not very much for something that's not very nutritious. McDonald's is one up from that. Highly systemized, not taking anything away from fast food workers, but they're not highly skilled. You know, I try to be at the upper end of the spectrum where I give a lot of attention and care, and I don't need many customers because I'm charging quite a lot. But, you know, that's not to say one is right and one is wrong. It just doesn't mean that I don't have to have a million page views a month. I don't have to have an email list of 200,000. In fact, most of the time when I launch any products, most people don't know I'm even offering it. You know, I don't have to bombard my list. So as a shy introvert, not making a big splash is a good thing. And also I like that smaller group. I like giving that much attention. And that's what I encourage other people to do as well. You know, charge what you're worth and you won't need to have as many customers. You spend more time on making sure that they get a good experience than, you know, getting refunds and having to deal with or the nightmare of having thousands and thousands of clients all at once.
What do you tend to get most, you know, asked about, or in terms of, you know, when you're speaking, or even in terms of maybe a you know, most popular blog post?
It depends on who I'm speaking to. If I'm speaking to bloggers, most of the time they ask, how can I get more traffic? How can I make more money? How do I get more comments? If I'm speaking to business people, it tends to be, how do I get more sales leads without wasting all my time, and you know, especially people who have heard about social media, that they tend to say to me, you know, I can't spend all day on Twitter, but I need to be doing this. When I'm speaking to my coaching clients, very often they want to know. A lot of them want to have the exact same business as I've got. Well, when they first start talking to me, then they quickly realize that they can't be me because I'm taken, but they can be them. When I'm talking to big companies, a lot of them ask how they can get some of this internet stuff, but outsource a lot of it or systemize it. You know, how can they have checks and balances? There's a lot of industries where giving their blogger or writer free rein would be just suicide. So it depends on the audience I'm speaking to, really. And it's evolved over time.
Okay.
Originally, a lot of people would ask me, why should I have a blog? And how do I set one up? Now it's kind of a given. A lot of, you know, the tactical stuff's about Twitter and Facebook, but they assume that they should have a blog. So it's interesting how that's changed.
What do you think people are missing? And when I'm saying people, I mean like the small business or solo business owner. Or what do you think these people are missing or maybe not looking at in online marketing?
I think there's things that they're not looking at, which is the engagement of their actual key prospect. But related to that is that some of the people that come to me have been burned by magic bullets. I call it silver bullet poisoning, because a lot of people, they work out, okay, we need to get some more customers through the internet, online sales. And they make the shift from realizing that they need to do it through to becoming very, very, very tactical and looking at all these push button systems and these make millions overnight and all these wild claims that, you know, are compelling but not truthful, not 100% truthful. And so these magic bullets clearly don't work. You know, the only overnight successes I know took 10 years to make. All of us would love the magic wand that makes money shoot out of a computer. It just doesn't happen. So it's a bit strange combination of, you know, you have to focus on who you can most help, most want to help, and can make the biggest impact for. That's a specific target audience. And you have to build a strategy of engaging those people, and the tactics fit into that strategy. And it's also what I was saying earlier about having the mindset and the environment, knowing if you've got the skills, do you need to outsource the skills? Do you need to develop the skills? It's not about buying an ebook about a tactic and thinking that's going to make the big difference. So it's a combination of stuff that they do look at and the stuff that they should look at. But it all comes down to, you know, you have to start with your strategy, and your strategy has to come out of what your actual goals are.
Can you identify a say, 2 to 3 trends that these small business owners should be excited about?
Should be excited about. I think small business owners have never had the opportunity that they've got now to reach their audience in a interactive, fast, cheap, and effective way that they have now. If we go back in time, if we go even back to my old Fortune 100, 500 clients, back when I worked for advertising agencies, to have that sort of reach, you would have to have TV, radio, print media access. You would have to have a big established brand. Now you can go around these big Goliaths very easily and very quickly if you approach it correctly. You can have them come to you instead of having to, you know, constantly be advertising, and they will be delighted and thank you for it. You know, thank you for offering this product for me to buy, which is amazing. So that's exciting, and it's a very fulfilling business to be in, being able to reach people and actually have an impact on them. I think the worry is that there is so much choice in terms of tools and tactics that it's very easy to get caught up in all that and forget about the actual business side. And there's a lot of people who are making a lot of money on the speaking circuit but not having to do it, that are giving people not bad advice, but advice that is compelling to hear but might be misleading in terms of what they should actually be doing on their day-to-day basis for the business. Because, you know, it is a real danger that people can spend all their time doing stuff that feels like they're making progress but actually doesn't have a bottom line impact. You always have to bring it back to keeping your business going. And while you're marketing your business, you have to be delivering the service that you're promising. You can't be, you know, spending all day chatting and calling it engagement. You know, you can't be spending all day blogging and calling it transparency and authenticity, because, you know, you've got to pay the bills as well.
Oh, exactly. Just to go back to something you mentioned, you put your time in terms of building a career, and you really did kind of transfer from different things. Like you said, you started out, had a blog, you were writing on, I have one, Real World ASP. You had that. ASP
Today. You've done your research, haven't you?
Yeah. And you really made a transition from, you know, early on saying, identifying new media and the opportunities there. And I'm going to read something to you and see if you recognize this.
Go ahead.
Okay, it's entitled Star, and it's dated Friday, October 5th, 2001. I've never sought out fame. It's not something that interests me. Looking at Posh and Beck's, they can keep it. It would be nice to be known and respected in my industry. Is that still fame?
Gosh.
Do you recognize that?
That's something you've obviously got from the Wayback Machine. I think what prompted that was somebody set up an email list, which was a fan club for me. And I was all of a sudden getting a lot of people reading my articles, not just the normal amount of traffic which you hope for, but I was getting a lot of attention all of a sudden, and it frightened me a bit, because a guy, I later found out this guy was bipolar, which if I'd have known at the time, I wouldn't have been as afraid. But the guy, it's funny how things go in cycles, but the guy absolutely ripped into me and attacked me. And the guy had a big following, and he was very, very popular. And he had so much influence, he could have stopped me in my tracks then. And I actually talked over with my wife, saying, it's not worth it. It's not worth this heat. And so I was getting the good side and getting the bad side of, all of a sudden, people knew me. But at the time, I didn't feel like I'd got authority or influence. I just felt like suddenly I was in the spotlight, and I wasn't sure if I deserved it, wasn't sure if I wanted it. And I stick by it. I don't think what we want is fame, but I think it's nice to have a good brand reputation, position in whatever you want to call it in your industry. I think that's a good thing. But I've always said to my brother, I'd rather be the writer than the rock star. I'd rather be the songwriter than the rock star. You know, it's not about being the person that gets the adulation. It's about making the impact, I think, that's more important for me.
That must be tough, a tough balance, though, in terms of what people's perceptions are and how you manage that.
It is tough, and for a lot of people, perception is reality. And whatever you say isn't going to change that. You've got to be very careful. It's almost, I feel like we're moving into a phase now where we always almost have to be like politicians. I don't check what I say. I kind of say what I feel. And sometimes I think, oh, that could be taken out of context. I shouldn't have said that. But at the same time, you can only talk to the people who are ready to listen. So, it is difficult. And I'm not sure if there ever will be a solution. You know, we can't all hire PR managers, can we?
No, and nor do we want to, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
There's a phrase somebody used the other day. It said, don't use logic to argue somebody out of an opinion they didn't use logic to get into. And I can't remember the exact phrase, but it does make a lot of sense. You know, if they haven't arrived at a frame of mind through rational logic, then using logic isn't going to persuade them. Using facts, the truth, isn't going to persuade them because they've made up their mind. So all you can do is focus on the nice people, the people you can and want to help, and try and forget about the rest of it.
Speaking about trying to focus on what's, you know, where the value is, et cetera, and the positive, there's so much out there right now, so many different news sources. What do you end up counting on? What do you read every day, and why?
It's a strange thing for a blogger to say, but I stopped using Google Reader. I stopped reading blogs that way. I've signed up to a couple of blogs via email, but most of what I get now, my feed, if you like, is Twitter, and I follow probably too many people on Twitter, something like 10,000 or something. But I have a lot of lists, which helps. And I follow back anybody who I have a conversation with in real life, on Twitter, in social media, via email. And that's why I follow so many people. If anybody's had a conversation with me, even just a couple of, you know, at replies on Twitter, I follow them back. And that's how I find out about everything that's important. You know, if somebody's posted a new article, that's where I see it. If there's something interesting happening in the industry or any of the things that I follow, that's how I find out. So I have a Twitter list called Canada. So anything Canada or Calgary related, that's where I find out about it. And it means I don't have to read as many websites, because if it's important, it kind of bubbles up to the top.
That's good advice. Well, Chris, thanks so much for your time. It's been a pleasure to be part of the Third Tribe and Authority Rules, and to learn from you and Sonia and the rest. So I just want to end on a positive note, because I know it's been kind of a tough summer.
Yeah, no
based
worries.
On what you said.
And I enjoyed talking to you. It was good.